Berzubin! Scrabadoob! Labacumbadoobra!
Spirits of the dead, we want to know what lies beyond this life we live.
You can't see anything but ghosts. Evil, evil, blurry ghosts.
Spirits of the dead, hear me. Hear me.
Turn up the music!
Oh, did you miss me?
Yeah.
When I was away, did you hang my picture on your wall? Did you miss me?
Yeah.
When I was away, when you didn't see me at all, did you want me?
Just like old times. We'll go out, we'll find some poor slobs and cut them open and make love in their entrails.
Damn straight.
I can really relate to that.
Demented are go,
go, go, go, go, go, go, go, go, go, go, go, go, go, go, go.
Skeleton pretty in my soul. Body's hanging on a pole. Horses snowing in a blazing fire.
Blood of albinos, thundering hoofs like a thousand rhinos, muscles twitch and start to stretch, bringing me closer and closer to death. Yeah,
death rides a horse with a gun and a smoke, gunslinging gringo, dead blood soaked, fast on the draw, faster to die. Death rides a horse, and so do I.
Oh man, it feels like I was locked in that vault for a month.
Welcome, fiends. Welcome to the show. Back from the dead. Rumored Radio. Hey, the Weird White Web's only horror broadcast. Yes, good to be back. Breaking radio silence. I'm your host, Tomb Dragomir.
Rock icon. Radio DJ. All around scary guy.
This week on the broadcast.
When Star Wars came out, Star Wars did to science fiction what Jaws did to horror films. It was bigger and it was better. And at that point, I realized our market was going to slide away from us.
The long-awaited sequel to our interview, it's part two with Roger Corman as Roger Corman returns. Our blood-spattered guide to music leads us down into some dark shadows, and the caustic critics are taking on that hit new happening TV series all the kids are talking about, Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
She's Buffy. And no demon.
Don't worry, I don't bite.
No vampire. No creature from hell.
What is your childhood trauma?
Can stop her.
Oh, mercy, terror tunes on Root Fiends from Hawaii, Samurai, Christopher Beck, and Raquel, the Brains, new music there, Mannheim's Steamroller, plus tons more fun to come on your home for horror, rot, and roll. Your skinny puppy, let's go.
I hope you make sure we're properly dead before you start, old Ripbeak.
I'm the guy here that in the white coats tank. It's little enough to...
Left.
when you thought you were out of their grasp. They're back. The fog has returned to prove that what you can't see won't hurt you. It'll kill you. And Phantasm is back to kill you all over again. Two terrorific hits together to grab you. The Fog and Phantasm, rated R.
Folks, we've just seen the movie Gas, or It Became Necessary to Destroy the World in Order to Save It. Let's talk to some of the audience. Sir, how did you like the picture?
Like it? I hated it.
Well, let's get somebody else.
Now, wait a minute, you creep. That's a subversive movie. A bunch of long-haired little creeps gas everybody over 25.
So why'd you come to see it?
I'm a tolerant man. I'm trying to understand the little creeps.
What about the music? Country Joe and the Fish.
You call that music? Whatever happened to Lawrence Welk?
Then you wouldn't recommend the movie Gas to people your age.
Recommend it? I'm going to pick at it. It's time we showed these little creeps who's boss around here. That's what.
I think you still do not understand. And I think it's time that you did. The tarn is very deep. One of the Usher women drowned herself in it. She was never found.
I'm waiting, Mr. Usher.
Last night you asked me about the singular aridity of the land around this house. Once this land was fertile, farms abounded, earth yielded her riches at harvest time. There was great beauty here. At that time, this water was clear and fresh. Swans glided upon its crystal surface. And then something crept across the land and blighted it. The trees lost their foliage. The flowers languished and died. Shrubs grew brown and shriveled. The grain fields perished. The lakes and ponds became black and stagnant, and the land withered as before a plague.
Plague?
Yes, Mr. Winter. A plague of evil.
Hello, this is Vincent Price, or an incredible simulation, and you're listening to Rue Morgue Radio. You are, you know.
Alright, so first of all, what is the state of the Church of Satan?
I was going to ask you about Wes Craven, and now I'm ashamed to.
Les Messman style.
Possibly the Antichrist.
Like a zombie character on Sesame Street. All of a sudden, it seems so irrelevant. Continue.
I speak nothing but the fucking English language. And if that's infamous, then
tough titters.
Happy New Year, everybody. Not only a Happy New Year, but a Happy New Decade. We're kicking off 2010 with part two of my interview with legendary film producer and director Roger Corman, recorded at the 2009 Festival of Fear. So in the 60s, you made a series of Edgar Allan Poe adaptations with Vincent Price that remain perhaps the most celebrated films of your career. It all started with The House of Usher, which seems to be like a real lightning in a bottle scenario. First of all, they have this fantastic public domain Edgar Allan Poe tale, a great script by Richard Matheson, brilliant cinematography, and a man who, more than anyone, embodies the sort of madness and obsessiveness of Edgar Allan Poe, and that was obviously Vincent Price. So could you tell me how you managed to weave all of those elements together?
I had been making a series of pictures for two companies primarily, American International and Allied Artists. I worked more with American International. And both companies had a way to market very low-budget pictures. They would go. It was going back a little bit to the major studios technique of the 1930s, two pictures for the price of one. I would make two 10-day black and white horror pictures and send them out together, or two teenage pictures. It always worked. They had to be the same type of picture. At one time we tried one horror film, one action film. It didn't work. It had to be two pictures of a similar style. And AIP wanted me to do two black and white horror films. And I was getting a little tired of this, and also I participated in the profits, and I said this had been a very good sales technique, but I could see the profits were dropping a little bit. The audience maybe was getting a little bored with this concept, and I was getting really bored making the pictures, and I said, let me take the money and make 1 3-week color film, which is a horror film, and AIP asked me what I wanted to make, and I said, The Fall of the House of Usher.
For hundreds of years, evil thoughts and evil deeds have been committed within these walls. The house itself is evil now.
Surprisingly, they agreed very rapidly. They were a young, aggressive company, and I think they too felt that they wanted to move up a little bit. So I had 3 weeks and got, as you say, a very good script from Dick Matheson, who wrote almost all of the Poe pictures.
Only the incomparable genius of Edgar Allan Poe could knit them so closely together.
You buried your own sister alive!
I did. But she's dead now.
Vincent Price was almost the obvious choice. We had a certain amount of money to spend for the leading man. We wanted a little bit of a name. So we hired Vincent, sent him the script. I had lunch with him, had a very pleasant discussion with him, and we made the film.
Theobroma, a lovely word, a Greek word, food of the gods.
Exactly why, then, was Vincent Price the obvious choice?
The character, if you know The Fall of the House of Usher, the lead character is Roderick Usher, a very refined, highly intelligent, educated gentleman, extremely sensitive, and a little bit crazy. And the intelligence, the sophistication, and the offbeat character of Vincent just made him perfect for the role.
One of my favorite Poe films that he did was the one that actually doesn't star Vincent Price. It was Ray Milland in The Premature Burial. So could you explain why Ray Milland was in that film and not Vincent Price?
The explanation is very simple. AIP and I had a slight difference of opinion as to, I had a percentage of the profits on every picture. I disputed their accounting. Quite frankly, I was right. Their accounting was not necessarily 100% honest. So I decided to do a Poe picture on my own. I had no reason to, I could make it anywhere. I didn't have to do it for AIP. Knowing that I was going to do this, AIP immediately signed Vincent Price to an exclusive contract. So I was unable to use Vincent. And I thought about the fact that in The Premature Burial, the character really should have been a little bit younger and more of a handsome leading man. And I thought of various possibilities, and I thought Ray Milland, who had been a great star, an Academy Award winner, and who was getting a little bit older, and as happens with some actors, his star was fading slightly, but he was still well known. And on the first day of shooting, Jim Nicholson and Sam Arkoff, the heads of AIP, came to the set, greeted me, and said, "Great to work with you again, Roger. We're partners once more." The day before, they had bought out Pathé's interest in the film, and I was again partners with AIP.
The way you described that, you're almost proud of them for their deceit. It's like you respect it, you know?
Yes, to a certain extent, because they then did change their accounting procedures and gave me a correct count, and I went on to do more pictures with them. And I thought, frankly, you're right. They were very clever.
So 1975 saw the release of the mega hit Jaws, which has often been referred to as a big-budget Roger Corman movie. So how did the release of Jaws change the business for you?
It really did change the film, and the words you've said were exactly what Vincent Canby, the lead critic for the New York Times, wrote. He wrote, "What is Jaws but a big-budget Roger Corman film?" What he didn't say, however, it's not only bigger, it's better. This is really a wonderful film. It deserves the great success it's had. But this is a little bit of a blow to the independents, because he's taking the type of film I and my contemporaries are making and making it bigger and better, making it more difficult for us to succeed.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
Jaws was part of two pictures that really changed the market. The second one was Star Wars. When Star Wars came out, Star Wars did the science fiction what Jaws did to horror films. It was bigger and it was better. And at that point, I realized our market was going to slide away from us, which forced us into raising our budgets to compete a little bit. I made a picture called Battle Beyond the Stars, which cost more money than I'd ever spent on a picture. In order to try to compete, and luckily it was successful, it did well. But it started a slight downward curve for independents, because part of our market had been taken away. There was still a market for us, but it was not as good ever as it had been up until those two films.
Is anybody home? Hello?
You're listening to Room Board Radio.
Roll Zombie Horror Show. Room Morgue Radio. Room Morgue Radio. Room Morgue Radio.
Dude! They're getting Yopo! Dude, if we're gonna die,
Yeah, there is a song called Bloodlines from Death Clock, the Death album, part 2, and there's always something going on in the wonderfully wacky world of horror. I know somebody who knows all about it. Let's go see what's happening with Shannon, the queen of toss salad.
All right, happy new year, all you fellow ghouls. Have you made your new year's resolution? You know, Tomb did. He actually wants to have better hair for 2010. I'm just kidding, really. He's like the Uncle Jesse of Rue Morgue. He has the most amazing hair in the world. All right, here is what's happening around the world. Frighthaven Haunted Houses are looking for an intern. They need someone who's an expert in social networking, MySpace, Twitter, Facebook. Contact Kelly at 203-795-4737 or Frighthaven's number 203-799-FEAR with your contact information and why you should be picked for the internship. First ever ghost tour to Scotland is happening May 8th to 15th, 2011. The ultimate spooktacular, unforgettable, and week-long adventure is to one of the scariest and most notorious locales in the United Kingdom. You can call 203-795-4737 for more details or fax 203-891-8433. And Horror Realm, Pittsburgh's modern horror convention, announces the hotel discount and advance purchase ticket prices for its 2010 show. The show will run from September 17th to the 19th at the Crown Plaza, Pittsburgh South. The hotel block sold out quickly last year, so get your reservations early. Reservations must be made by August 11th, 2010 to get in on the discount. You can go to horrorrealmcon.com for details on how to reserve your room and for how to get table rates for vendors and dealers through the early riser discounts available through until March 31st, 2010. And that's what's happening. If you know something that's happening horror-wise from around the world, give us an email, shannon@roomorgradio.com.
Hey, thanks, Shannon. So long since I've been zinged. Ah, feels good.
Your breath stinks. Boom, roasted.
Yeah, feels good. All right. It's the gothic soap opera Dark Shadows theme coming up in the Blood Spattered Guide, but first, a quick hit from Switchblade Chia and the Bone Gospel. Here's Good Book.
My brother doesn't love the sight on the inside. She died.
Music. Whatever happened to Lawrence Welk?
A Nazi legend.
I was 12 when he came to our farm. He needed blood for the ritual, so he froze us in time like this.
A stranger in search of power.
When you rule the blood, death is no longer the end.
And a stone that would make him invincible.
What is that out there?
We had him contained until he came here. We're all going to pay for this now.
Just tell me how to kill him.
Blood Creek, on DVD January 19th.
This is Bobby Steele of the Undead, and you're listening to Rue Morgue Radio.
Quentin. Miss Stokes told me about Maggie. It's very distressing. I would like you to meet my sister. This is Alexis Stokes, Elizabeth. My sister, Elizabeth Stoddard.
It's a pleasure to meet you, Mrs. Stoddard. But I seem to be interrupting. If you'll excuse us.
It's midnight. Isn't that the time you set for the seance, Angelique? Are we all ready?
Mm-hmm.
Hello, I'm Lisa Ladouceur, and I am 4 years old. Well, not me, but the blood-spattered guide turns four this week.
No, count, eat, count,
eat,
count!
Eat.
Wait.
What?
Three!
When I first came on the program to talk about music, the first thing I discussed was a TV show theme.
To the Batmobile. Let's go.
Batman. It surprises me that in the many podcasts since then, I've never paid tribute to another TV show theme that is a big part of horror music. And so this week, finally, it's time to go into the dark shadows.
How did he get in here? What did he see?
Oh, stop asking so many questions!
Will, he knows.
He knows what? That we have a coffin in the basement?
A chained coffin.
Dark Shadows can best be described as a gothic soap opera. It premiered on American television in 1966 and was one of, if not the first, to feature supernatural elements. By the time it went off the air in 1971, it had introduced werewolves, ghosts, and a particularly famous vampire star named Barnabas Collins.
Though the great house of Cullenwood looks the same, everything that happens in it is different this night. For Barnabas Collins is trapped in parallel time. He has entered another time band running concurrently with ours. And to his amazement, he discovers a Cullenwood ruled by the memory of a dead mistress, Angelique. And a new bride has entered the house, wanting to find happiness with Quentin, but instead finding an enemy she cannot fight.
For this unusual TV show, they needed a suitably unique theme. Creator Dan Curtis hired a composer named Robert Colbert, and in April of 1966, Robert walked into Dan's office and he whistled him this. That now famous theme from Dark Shadows was recorded in London with an orchestra, and when it came time to make the show, was played on set in the background off a vinyl record, because Dark Shadows had no post-production budget. It became one of the best-selling, most popular TV music in history. A piano ballad from the score called Quentin's Theme was a top Billboard single and nominated for a Grammy. The music is still in print if you're interested. There are a variety of packages from the basic soundtrack CD to a 30th anniversary deluxe edition to a super deluxe box set, all available in print. Robert Colbert continued to work with Dan Curtis on projects from Night Stalker to Trilogy of Terror to his last IMDb credit, The Love Letter. In his 80s, he seems to be retired, but if he's listening or any of his friends are listening, Rumorg Radio would love to talk to Robert Colbert about Dark Shadows and his other contributions to music and horror. Here is a really groovy version of the Dark Shadows theme song on Rumorg Radio.
Like, what is he doing here?
Did he get the coffin open, Will? Did he?
Oh, if he did, I wouldn't have had to do this to him. Barnabas Collins would have taken care of him. Maybe I should have let that happen.
What are you gonna do?
I am going to protect my investment, that's all. Putting all this time into my book. I'm not gonna let some stranger ruin it now.
Thank you.
There's Mannheim Steamroller from the Creatures Collection, Dark Shadows theme. Hey, 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 we've got The Brains, new music featuring Sarah Sin, coming up right after this word from the man.
What's your test?
I don't need one. From now on, I control all aspects of the game.
You feel you have control, don't you? You think you will walk away untested?
The Jigsaw Killer may be dead, but the murders continue.
When all this is done, you know what to do.
Who else knows about me?
Everyone.
Saw 6. Get it and the original Saw feature film when you buy Saw 6 on DVD while supplies last.
Here's The Brains featuring Sarah Sin from The Creep Show. You're dead on your home for horror, rock and roll, reborn.
You're dead.
Forever.
Christopher Beck. Instrumental score stuff from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which we've got the review of coming up. 10 years too late, perhaps, but there is the Caustic Critics right after Hawaii Samurai. Stay tuned.
Julie Benz. I play Rita on Dexter, and you're listening to Rue Morgue Radio.
The Caustic Critic.
Controversial. Unrelenting. It's brutal. It's nasty.
Sensational.
The worst of the worst.
Offend everyone equally.
Bowling.
They're real.
This stuff shit scrapes off the bottom of its shoes.
They're mean.
So what was the actor's name?
Oh, God, what a plank he is.
They're here.
Are you ready? It's time for the Caustic Critic.
They're here.
All right, this is feedback. Happy New Year once again.
You just stepped on me.
We're beginning the new year awkwardly with you missing your cues. What a terrible way to begin.
That's why I said we should show up early and rehearse, but you never do that.
No, fuck that.
Anyway, like I was trying to say, this is Last Chance Lance.
I thought you said you weren't going by Last Chance Lance.
I was thinking about going with Baron von Lansenstein for the year 2010, but I'm no.
Stick with Last Chance
Lance. Yeah. For now.
So did you have a good holiday?
I did. I actually worked the whole holiday, actually. What did you do?
What did I do? I actually embarked upon a Buffy the Vampire Slayer marathon watching session. Multiple sessions of the first 5 seasons of the show.
Wow. So you jumped back to 1992 or whatever? When did it start?
97, 98 or something.
Wait a minute, Doc. Are you telling me that you built a time machine?
Cool, you're just 10 years behind everybody else.
That's right, I'm 10 years behind. But it's interesting because when I had Julie Benz on the show, a few people were quite upset by the fact that I never asked her anything related to Buffy the Vampire Slayer or
Angel. I'm still outraged over that.
You're still outraged. A couple of people on the message boards, I got a couple of angry, sarcastic emails about that. And I dismissed it. On the following week, I actually scoffed at the idea. I said, come on, this is Rue Morgue Radio, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. We don't pay attention to that, blah, 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 blah. In my ignorance, I scoffed at the show and so on.
I did too. You know what? Not to take away your fire here, but...
Well, you
I was
did.
I did, and I will continue to. Happy New Year. No, listen, when Buffy was out and on TV and everything, I couldn't stand it, and people that would join, that would have these Buffy parties, they'd all get together and watch it. I was like, you bunch of fucking
idiots.
It's
those people that put me off watching it.
Same here, dude. And then just by chance for me, I just happened to find it in a pawn shop when I was getting rid of my grandmother's old jewelry after she died. But I had some Nazi gold I was getting rid of, and I just wanted to I saw it there the first season for $10, and I was like, $10, come on.
Whatever.
I'll give it a shot, and I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
Welcome to sunny California. Who could imagine that beneath this perfect little community lies the mouth to hell and our only hope of survival?
To each generation, a slayer is born.
Is in high school.
Turn up the music!
Buffy, you are the slayer.
And of course, the series began after the movie. Joss Whedon wrote the movie from the late
80s. Which was the
80s.
Only good thing about it, that and Donald Sutherland and Rutger Hauer.
I never even watched the movie. But I know that the events of the TV show take place after. And it's basically a girl in high school. She has these superpowers as a vampire slayer. Not that we need to really give a synopsis.
And her name is Buffy?
Her name is Buffy.
Buffy and your history.
Trained to maim.
You're the Slayer and we're like the Slayerettes.
Dressed to kill.
If there's something bad out there, we'll find. You'll slay. We'll party.
And she lives in a town called Sunnydale, which is located on a Hellmouth.
Yes.
Which is a portal between hell and this dimension, right?
Yes.
That just basically provides an excuse for the writers to plunder every kind of horror mythology they can imagine. They tackle all the classics, you know,
werewolves.
Zombies, werewolves, extraterrestrials.
Yeah, it's all there.
Halfway through season two, it kicks in.
Yeah.
And we don't want to give too many plot spoilers, but I will mention this. They do deal with a major kind of coming-of-age situation for Buffy, the loss of her virginity. In a two-part... Well, that's as much as I'm going to say. In a
Spoiler alert, man.
A two-part episode that is just remarkably emotionally raw, intense, and deals with these really painful, real themes. Despite the comedic, nonsensical, fun aesthetic of the show, which is again another big turnoff for me. The idea of Valley Girls fighting vampires, I just didn't want any part of it.
But it works.
Don't take this the wrong way, but...
Ow!
What are you doing here? Five words or less.
Out for a walk, bitch.
It works, and despite that, they managed to tackle real painful human emotions and situations probably more effectively or as effectively as television has ever managed to tackle these subjects.
Oh, I think much more effectively.
Brilliant.
It goes into so much more as well. It goes into some real concerns about, familial death.
Definitely one of the most masterful episodes of the series, and it epitomizes everything that's great about it. And basically, he's dealing with grief, but he's hitting all the major notes of what happens when you lose somebody close to you. The confusion, the weird questions that you ask yourself.
Anger.
The anger, the things that you don't know what to say.
Are we going to see the body?
What?
Are we going to be in the room with the dead body?
I don't know. No? Are they going to cut the body open?
Oh, my God. Would you just stop talking? Just shut your mouth. Please.
What am I doing?
How can you act like that?
Am I supposed to be changing my clothes a lot? I mean, is that the helpful thing to do?
Guys.
The way you behave.
Nobody will tell me.
Because it's not okay for you to be asking these things.
But I don't understand.
The way he directed it, it's just purely cinematic and stylistically inventive. And
very much.
Meditative and melancholic. But then, this is what they do brilliantly on this show, and I'm always looking for this in the horror genre. They use the mythology to explore metaphorical possibilities.
Oh,
so they have
constantly
a character.
Yeah.
Right, they have a character in this episode who, she's a demon trapped in a human body, and she doesn't know how to deal with her human emotions, so she's saying the wrong thing, and she just simply becomes a vessel for us to experience. She's basically an amped up version of what we're like.
Mm-hmm.
When somebody close to us dies, that's what we go through. We don't know what to say, we don't know how to deal with the emotions.
I don't understand how this all happens. How we go through this. I mean, I knew her, and then there's just a body. And I don't understand why she just can't get back in it and not be dead anymore. It's stupid. It's mortal and stupid. And Xander's crying and not talking, and I was having fruit punch, and I thought, well, Joyce will never have any more fruit punch, ever, and she'll never have eggs or yawn or brush her hair, not ever, and no one will explain to me why.
What also makes the series so good is they can take a heavy subject like that, but then another episode, is completely comedic. And there's some fantastic episodes, and ones that people, you probably heard them talk around the water cooler or online, whatever. There was an episode that was all musical, where everybody's singing and dancing, but it's done in an intelligent way. There's a reason why they're all singing. There's a demon that makes people break out into song. There's another episode where no one can say a word.
Hush,
which is just amazing.
We could talk all day about that one episode, but we can't because we're out of time.
Man.
So in short, if you're like me and you dismissed Buffy, check it out. And if you are a fan and you were annoyed at my comments last year, then I apologize. And to make it up to you, we're going to be giving away a Buffy the Vampire Slayer prize package, courtesy of our good friends over at Dark Horse Comics. We're still working out the details, but it'll be comic books and possibly some signed lithographs in there, but they're putting together a package for us.
Late-breaking giveaway news, Doom here. Hey, feedback, we've actually got 5 Buffy the Vampire Slayer packages to give away. Count them, 5. Yes, they each contain 1 Buffy print signed by cover artist Joe Chan, but that's not all. You also receive Buffy Season 8, Volume 1, Buffy Omnibus, Volume 1, and Buffy Conversations with Dead People. Ouija board. Cool.
If you're interested, drop us a line at contest@rue-morg.com, put Buffy the Vampire Slayer in the subject line, and we're going to pick a winner by random. So thank you very much to Dark Horse Comics, and thank you to the Rue Morg man himself, Mr. Jody Infernari, for getting this sorted out lickety split.
So until next time, this is Last Chance Lance,
and this is Baron Von Feedback.
Oh god, Happy New Year.
Time, fiends, it's time to go. Thanks for listening to the show. The one that nearly ate my brain. I hope you dug it.
Say
happy 75th birthday to Elvis Presley, wherever you are. Oh, thank you very much.
That's it? That's the chant against evil from the Book of Souls? Oh, yeah, right, boss. And what kind of decoder ring comes with that, man? Shit, don't even rhyme well.
Follow me on Twitter, Toom, T-R-A-G-O-M-I-R. Is there time for one more Toom? Yes, Toom, you know there is, Toom. Why don't you go take a nice long turd nap? I think I will. Here's Henrik Hell, radio show. Until next week, fiends, adios.
Got ourselves a radio show tonight. And every single sound comes out crystal clear. Oh. goods and all the bads, all those in between conversations. Got ourselves a radio show tonight, and every sound comes out loud, and everyone can listen to what we broadcast. All the neighbors in the block can listen to how we strive for luck. Got ourselves a radio show tonight. It's always on, it's free of charge, and there's never been a rerun.
Uncle Jesse of Rue Morgue. He has the most amazing hair in the world.
Damn right.
Don't take this the wrong way, but...
Ow!
Oh.